Well, good morning. Like I said just a few minutes ago, we are so incredibly excited that each and every one of you are here with us. But this morning, I find myself even more excited that you are here as we kick off this brand new series over the course of the next 6 weeks that we are calling Investigating Jesus. And over these next 6 weeks, we're going to begin to answer some of the biggest questions that we have as it revolves around this man and our faith. As I began to plan our 2024 and the most fitting ways for us to jump into a new year, over the last 6 weeks, we just came out of this series that we called Ever Wonder Why. And we addressed some of our biggest questions and biggest doubts as it pertains to our faith. Questions that so frequently begin with why. Why does God allow bad things to happen? Why does hell exist? Why does it seem like God isn't always answering my prayers? Why do I keep doing the things I know I shouldn't be doing? And on and on. And we could think of no better ways to parlay those first 6 weeks of answering some of our biggest questions and doubts as it pertains to our faith from a 30,000 foot view than for us to continue along in that same vein to begin to hone in on some of the questions and doubts that we have revolving around Jesus. Because when push comes to shove, what lies at the center of every single one of our faiths is Jesus. And yet the questions that we need answered are these. Is Jesus real? Did he really do what we're supposed to believe that he did? How do we know? Why do we follow? And so over the course of the next 6 weeks, we're going to take a puzzle piece at a time and begin to plug it in to answer some of those questions that give us, both as people who may not be presently following Jesus or who may have walked away because there wasn't enough proof, something to stand on. But also give those of us who consider ourselves Jesus followers something that we can use in our tool bags to defend who Jesus was and the validity that he did what he said he was going to do. And so throughout this series, we will tackle it a piece at a time to begin to unveil why we can believe that Jesus was the Son of God, that he was real, he walked on this earth, that he died, and that he rose again. And yet what I can acknowledge is this, is that when trying to find an answer to all of those questions about the validity of Jesus, there is this one question that rises to the surface in so many of our lives and in so many of our minds. A question that can be uncomfortable for us to admit that we have, and yet when forced to get honest, a question that is so real that we wish someone would be courageous enough to step forward and just answer for us. And the question is this, is that when it comes to knowing if there is a God, or who God is, or even who God likes, is really all we have to go on is that the Bible tells us so? Is that really the only footing we have beneath us as proof to who God is and what God's like, whether God exists and even who God likes on this earth? Because this might be our hesitation if the answer to that question is yes. Our hesitation may be that at face value, when we look at this book, when we pick it up and we begin to survey it and investigate it, is that this book at face value looks at it as if it was simply written by dozens of men, and only men for that matter. Men who had never met each other in most cases. Men who wrote this over the course of hundreds of years. Men who wrote this at a time in history in which they didn't have modern day science like we presently have it. And furthermore, men who chose to write this at a time in which it seems like these men were hanging on to some pretty major superstitions. And when we take all of those things into account, we begin to ask the question, is it possible that these men could have just been making this up? Is it possible that thousands of years ago, these men set out to simply try to explain something that was unexplainable? To give it their best effort out of their worst knowledge? And when those questions and those thoughts begin to creep into our minds, into our thought process, is it really surprising that there are people just like you and me who are walking away from their faith? Is it really surprising when those questions and those doubts begin to creep into our minds that, as the popular terminology is in 2024, that there are people who are choosing to deconstruct their faith? Is it really all that surprising that people have walked out the door or maybe just simply made the determination that it's time for me to take a step back and to really not be all in because I'm not sure about all the answers and all the proof? You see, maybe this morning you walked into this room or you're watching online, and what you would admit is, if you were forced to get honest enough, is that right now your hand is on the doorknob. Because there's a whole lot of questions and a whole lot of doubts that have gone unaddressed as it pertains to this man named Jesus, who is the central figure of our faith, that have gone unanswered for far too long for me to continue to believe, for me to continue to just walk simply by faith. And if your hand is on the doorknob, this is the thought that's run through your head. If Christianity balances precariously on the edge of ancient manuscripts written by superstitious men, why not walk? Why not walk away? Why not throw in the towel? Because it certainly doesn't feel like there's a whole lot to stand on. As it turns out, maybe contrary to what you've been told, what you've heard, what you've believed up until this point of your life, what we believe about Jesus, we don't just believe it because the Bible tells us so. No. It is far more substantial than that. It is so much better than that, y'all. In fact, maybe much to your surprise, the Christian faith is, in fact, investigable. And some of y'all are looking at me and you're like, Ben, is that even a word? And the reality is if you've heard me speak, you know there isn't a whole lot that keeps me between the navigational beacons of the English language. But the one thing I came to discover is when I wanted to say that it's investigatable, that actually isn't a word. This is the word, y'all. That Christianity and Jesus himself is investigable. And do you know what that means? That means that you and I are actually being invited to kick the tires. You and I actually have the ability to ask the hard questions. And if you walked into this room and you are a Christian who doesn't presently have your hand on the doorknob, and the thoughts that are running through your mind right now are this, well, this series really isn't for me. Hold on just a second. Because I believe with all of my heart that this series is specifically designed for you as well, and here is why. Because as we walk back out into our world and we encounter people who are skeptical about Jesus, we no longer have to have a response that's just shrugging our shoulders and saying, well, I guess you just have to have faith. I guess you just gotta believe. Because while that may work for you, what you know beyond a shadow of a doubt is this. That isn't working for your son-in-law. That doesn't work for your brother-in-law. It doesn't work for your coworker. It hasn't worked for your best friend since third grade for an awfully long time. You see, what I know and what I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt, and if you'll hang in there with me, what you'll begin to see that gives us a faith that we can stand on is this, is that Christianity does not rise and fall on the back of 66 ancient documents. No, y'all. In truth, Christianity rises and falls on the back of one man, Jesus. This man who was known as Jesus of Nazareth. Because If Jesus wasn't actually God in flesh, if he didn't actually die on a cross and 3 days later come back to life, there is no such thing as Christianity. Can we all just come forward and admit that? That if those things aren't real and didn't actually happen, there is no such thing as Christianity. And if that's the case, if that's the truth, then the question we should be asking is this: is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John real? Are any of those trustworthy? And I strategically put the word "or" in there, because if any of those four, if just one of them is reliable and real, it changes everything. It changes everything in your life, your future, your eternity. It changes everything in our city, in our world. Everything changes if but one of those accounts is real and reliable. And in order for us to get to this place where we find the answer to that question, are any one of those real or reliable, something that we can trust and have confidence in from this day forward? Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to paint a picture for you to give you the proof that we can stand on. More than just, I guess you got to have faith. Something true that we can stand on as we investigate Jesus. But in order for us to do that, we have to start in the appropriate place. Because for many of us, over the years that we've been in church or the years in which we've claimed to follow Jesus, we have this misconstrued belief about this. About how this came to be, about how this started, about the sequence of events when it comes to our faith. And so in order for us to understand and put the first puzzle piece into place, I wanted to show you guys a diagram. And yet what you guys all should know by now, if you've been around here for any amount of time, is this. It has been no secret that I have not a musical bone in my body. You don't want to hear me sing. You don't want to see me touch an instrument. And the same can be said for my artistic ability. And so this week, I decided instead of y'all having to hang with me for an extra 20 minutes as I tried to make a legible drawing that you can understand, I would do that in advance for y'all. And so what I want to share with you this morning is this. And you're like, Ben, that was your best effort of 20 minutes of work in advance. That's the best I got, y'all. And you see, what we begin to have unveiled before our eyes is a better understanding of how this came to be, but furthermore, how our faith came to be and what our faith in Jesus and how investigable he is happened. And see, spelled out before us is this reality. That 2,000 years ago on this earth, something happened. There was an event that took place when God put on flesh and stepped onto the pages of history. As he walked on this earth, and we have greater documentation of this 3-year span of his life when he turned about 30 years old, and we see the stories and the accounts of the miracles that he did, there came a day in which the God of the universe sacrificed himself on my behalf. He went to a cross and died an embarrassing death that was seen, that was felt. And 3 days later, that same guy who everyone saw die on a cross walked out of the grave. And in the immediate aftermath of them seeing this guy that they had already seen die 3 days ago, now living again, eating breakfast with them again, walking on the beach with them again, there was this movement that began that was immediately birthed out of that. Because I don't know about you, y'all, but when a guy says, I'm going to die and 3 days later, I'm going to rise again, and then he actually goes off and does it, you follow him, right? And when they saw that happen, there was this incredible movement that was spawned, that was birthed in that moment. And from that movement of the eyewitnesses who saw this event take place, hundreds and hundreds of people, As this movement began to grow uncontrollably, not just in Jerusalem and Judea, but all across the Mesopotamian rim, as guys like Paul, one of the greatest missionaries of all time, began to spread this gospel of hope, this good news to the Gentiles and to the world at large, they got this brilliant idea. That because of the hope that we see people attaching to, that is centered on this event that we saw, that we witnessed, we have to write down so that this can be preserved and retold and carried across all of the world to share the accuracy of this one event. And everything was documented, and each of these things happened all within the first century. In fact, scholars would debate, and I would argue vehemently, that all of this happened before 70 AD. Which means the documentation of the event happened somewhere between 30 to 35 years at maximum after they saw Jesus walk out of the grave. And then 300 years later, what we have is the assembly of all of these documents, all of these accounts that were written, now put together, and the formation of the Bible was made. And yet here's what's so incredible, y'all, is that when we look at those first century occurrences, many people who are an opponent to the Christian faith stand on a misconstrued truth of what took place in the formation of our faith and the formation of the Bible. Many people would say this: why did it take them 300 years to write down what they saw if it was so powerful? And what they miss, I actually saw Bill Maher talk about this. That it just doesn't make sense. It had to be made up. It couldn't be true that it didn't happen until 300 years after the actual event. And what those people miss is this: the documentation did not take place 300 years after it. It was simply the binding that took place 300 years after it. The documentation took place only about 30 years after the fact. And you're like, well, why 30 years? Why did it even take them that long? And I don't know if you know this, to give you a little bit of historical context to grab onto. Each of the disciples was most likely, as they were following Jesus, somewhere in their mid-teens. And this is why we know this. Because in ancient Jewish tradition, you would go to school, you would study from the ages of 5 to 12 years old. And then when you graduated from your studies at 13 years old, you were then eligible, if you chose to do so, instead of simply going out into the workforce at 13, you were eligible to be a full-time worker, to begin getting married, starting your own family in ancient Jewish tradition. You were eligible at 13, if you chose to do so, to find a rabbi that would mentor you. If you know anything about the story of Jesus, this is how these men, these disciples, originally looked at Jesus. He was a teacher, he was a mentor, he was a rabbi. These lowest of the lows were being chosen, and that didn't happen in ancient Jewish tradition, to follow this rabbi named Jesus. And then as they witnessed everything that Jesus did, this ministry that he had, and then him dying on a cross and coming back to life, these mid-teenagers were now stricken with a mission. Oh yeah, guys, I know you're only mid-teens, but now what I'm asking you to do is to go into all the world and launch my church. And I've been asked before, most likely by people who haven't heard me speak the English language on a Sunday morning, Ben, have you ever considered writing? And my simple answer to that is, I have no time for that. I'm in my mid-30s, y'all. I got a family, I got a marriage, I got one church that I'm trying to lead in one city. And in my mid-30s, I can't even begin to think about formulating chapters upon chapters of thoughts to write a book. And yet here were these guys who were stricken with all of this and launching this movement. And by the time they hit about upper 40s or maybe 50 years old, they had the time to go ahead and sit down and document the event that was seen. This is what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Luke again, did. And yet this whole thing brings us back to this one question. Can we trust any of those four? And if even one of them can be proven trustworthy, it changes everything. And so over these 6 weeks, I want to focus on just one. Over these 6 weeks, we're going to put the puzzle pieces together by focusing on Luke. And I thought this was most appropriate because not only does Luke document the event, but Luke in Acts also documents the beginning of the movement. And in order for us, I'm going to put this away so it no longer distracts us. In order for us to get a grasp on Luke and the provability, the investigableness of Luke, we have to start at the very beginning. And so today, that's what we're going to do with the time that we have left together. Today, we find ourselves kicking everything off, putting this first puzzle piece into place as we begin in Luke chapter 1, verse 1. Here is what Luke writes at the very beginning. Many people have set out to write accounts about the events that have been fulfilled among us. Now, right off the bat, y'all, maybe at face value you don't see this, but right off the bat, y'all, things get good. And right off the bat, there is an element in this very first verse that requires some personal reflection in order for us to understand the depth of what Luke is saying here. You see, Luke makes this statement. Many people have seen what happened, and because of that, many people have set out to write accounts of this event that they saw take place right in front of their eyes. That not only did the Son of God come to die on a cross for my sake and your sake, but 3 days later, he proved that even death wasn't too big for him. And here's the moment of self-reflection. I won't speak for you, I can only speak for myself. What I know about myself is this, is that when my life is all said and done and has come to a close, the amount of people who set out to write an account about my life will probably not be defined as many. It'll probably most likely be not many, if any. And because of that, it dictates the need for this question. Why so many? Why did so many people think it was necessary to write and define and explain the details of this one event? And y'all, this is why. Because in that moment, some 2,000 years ago, so many people had to write it down because something extraordinary had happened. Something unexplainable had happened before their eyes. And it wasn't just that something extraordinary had happened. Something good had happened. Something that was so good for me. So good for you. Something that was so good for your family. So good for your coworker. So good for our city. So good for our world. It was so good that it was for all of humanity. And because it was so extraordinary and so good, somebody had to tell. Somebody had to write it down. And many went to the writing table and attempted to write down the account of this event, what they had witnessed. But this is what's so significant. This sets the table for what Luke is about to write next. The way in which these people were selected, the people that chose to write it down, it was so abnormal from the way ancient history was written. You see, I don't know if you realize this or not, but it provides incredible perspective when we recognize this historical context. 99% of the ancient historical documents that you read were not done in the fashion that the Bible was written. And here's why. 99% of the documents that you read about ancient history were documents that were written by the rulers, the kings, and the conquerors. And they were often done long after the fact, when all of the eyewitnesses were gone, so that they could hand select a writer of their choice and tell them exactly how the history went down. And here was their major purpose in that. They wanted to do so so that they could write themselves into the story as favorably as possible. They wanted to look like the best of the best, the greatest of the greatest, always doing the right things, always making the right choices. And yet when we pick up Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, what we find is the exact opposite, y'all. These were the guys who saw it, witnessed it, investigated it, talked to the eyewitnesses. They lived it in their own life. And these were the guys who chose to write the accounts of an event and paint themselves into the picture, oftentimes pretty horribly. Do you realize that? They wrote themselves into the story as the guys who rarely understood what Jesus was talking about. They wrote into the story all of their screw-ups. They wrote into the story that after Jesus had told them he was going to die and then 3 days later he was going to rise again, there was not a one of them standing at the grave on Sunday morning going, 10, 9, 8, with their confetti poppers. Nobody expected nobody. They had all scattered at that point. They had thought life as they knew it was over. And they were stricken to just going back to being fishermen once again. And yet this is what happened in this ancient historical documentation. This is what happens that makes these accounts so refreshingly unique and believable. You see, that sets the table for what he says in verse 2. They used the eyewitness reports circulating among us from the early disciples. This is what Luke is saying. We went to as many eyewitnesses as we possibly could, the people who actually saw it, and they are the ones who wrote the story. And then he continues in verse 3. Having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I also have decided to write an accurate account for you, most honorable Theophilus. Luke says, I carefully investigated every detail from the very beginning. I did the painstaking work of making sure that everything checks out, of comparing one story to another story to another story to another story, over hundreds of eyewitnesses, to make sure that this was carefully investigated and examined to give you an accurate account. And then he says this, most honorable Theophilus. And this is why this is so good, y'all. Luke was not writing the Bible. Hello. Luke didn't even know that a Bible would exist. Luke had no idea if another person outside of Theophilus would ever read the account that he was writing. Luke wrote this carefully investigated account 300 years before the Bible even became a thing. But 300 years later, Luke's account was included in the Bible. Here's why. Because Luke's account was considered valuable and reliable the moment that he wrote it. If you're having trouble wrapping your mind around that concept, think of it this way. Think of the time that you and your spouse were going on a date weekend together. And on this weekend, you had some incredible plans made out. There were some fun things you were going to do, and then there was that one really fancy restaurant that you were going to one night of the weekend, and because of that, right, you were supposed to have your suit, and you bought all the best necklaces and bracelets and earrings that you had. Guys, maybe you got a really nice watch, and you brought that with you. And you checked into the hotel, you went up to your room, and yet that night, you were just going to the comedy club or just going to a taco bar. And it didn't require all the fancy, all the expensive stuff that you had brought with you. And so when you walked into your hotel room before you left, what did you look for? You looked for the safe in the corner of the room. And before you left the room, you put all of your valuable things into the safe to keep them safe. Now, here's my question. Did putting those things into the safe make them valuable? Or did you put them into the safe because they were already valuable? The same can be said for Luke's account. Luke's account was not valuable because it was included in the Bible. Luke's account was included in the Bible because it was already considered valuable and reliable from the moment that he wrote it. And so here's the question. If Luke investigated it, if he carefully investigated everything from the very beginning, and there's no reason to believe that he didn't, then what we can attach ourselves to is that something extraordinary actually happened that is really good for every single one of us. And then this next statement that Luke makes is so powerful. He gives us the why behind why he wrote it. He says this, "I wrote this accurate account for you, most honorable Theophilus, so that you can be certain of the truth of everything you were taught." It's as if Luke is looking some 2,000 years into the future and saying, "I wrote this so that you, Mark, so that you, Kathy, so that you, Jane, so that you, John, could be confident of everything that you believe in, everything that you have been written, so that your faith can be anchored not to a Bible story, to an event. So that your faith can be anchored to a man that we saw do all of these things and more. And these events began a movement that was so extraordinary and so good that to this day, that movement hasn't been stopped. But not for lack of trying. Some 200 years after the life of Jesus was originally documented, the Roman Empire was beginning to crumble in the 3rd century. The present emperor was a man by the name of Diocletian, and he got this brilliant idea. The reason why the Roman Empire is crumbling is because this Nazarene sect, the Way, is spreading uncontrollably throughout my empire. And these Jesus followers are not offering sacrifices to our gods. And that must be why our gods are upset with us, and that must be why the Roman Empire is crumbling beneath our feet. And so the most logical solution was what? To stamp out these Jesus followers. And the most logical way that he could come up with was this: to get rid of the accounts of this event that changed everything. Changed everything right then and there underneath his feet in the Roman Empire that he was ruling. The people are latching on to the hope of this man named Jesus, who not even the death of this world is too big for him, and that when he enters into our story, not even our own deaths are too big for him. How can I stomp that out? How can I get rid of that? And the most logical solution was this: to try to get rid of every account there was of these 3 days. And do you know what happened? As he persecuted, hunted down, executed anyone who is in possession of the documentation of the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus, do you know what these Jesus followers did? They believed so wholeheartedly in how extraordinary and how good this event, this moment was, that they literally gave their lives for it. To preserve the documentation of this, because they believed with all of their heart that it was powerful enough to change lives around the world. And even if it meant them losing their own life, they were willing to lose their own life for the sake of somebody else's eternity. That's how valuable. That's how reliable. That's how extraordinary. That's how good this was. People gave their lives to protect this biography of Jesus, and the letters that subsequently followed that gave us handlebars of how to follow Jesus in our world for our world. People risked and lost their lives for hundreds of years to preserve not a book full of stories, but the documenting of an event that changed everything. Something had actually happened that was seen and carefully investigated. So today, as we wrap this first puzzle piece, I want to challenge you with this. That if you walked into this room or you're walking or watching online and you find yourself skeptical, maybe your hand is on the doorknob, or you've already walked through the door, I would love for you to simply consider this. That if you choose not to follow Jesus because it's inconvenient, that's valid. I'll give that one to you. Because what I know and what I believe with all of my heart is that following Jesus will be inconvenient. It will ask of something out of you. It will ask something from you. You will be called to forgive those who don't deserve to be forgiven, to love those who are hard to love. Following Jesus will most definitely be inconvenient because it will cost you some of your earthly treasure to invest with irrational generosity for the sake of the broken, sick, and hurting around our world. It will ask you to be less selfish and more selfless. It will demand of you to not just live your life serving yourself, but to serve others as well. If you choose to follow Jesus, what you have to know is that it will be inconvenient. Now, what I can also guarantee you is this, is that I believe with all of my heart that following Jesus will make your life better, and it will make you better at life. But it will still be inconvenient at times. That's valid. But please, 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 don't choose not to follow Jesus because you don't think that the story of Jesus is valid. Please don't choose not to follow Jesus simply because you believe that the story of Jesus is not valid. Because in spite of what you heard in college, in spite of what the culture might try to tell you, it is valid. The story of Jesus is real because it isn't a Bible story. It is an event that was seen, that was witnessed, and then was written about. And up until this point, you may lay claim to the belief that, well, guys like Luke were just lying. But we don't need any more than puzzle piece number one in this whole equation to recognize that just doesn't make sense. If they were going to lie, they would have lied a whole lot better than that. They would have written themselves into the story a whole lot better than that. That just doesn't make sense when we take into account that there were many accounts, many eyewitnesses, many people who didn't paint themselves as perfect in the story, many sacrifices, many deaths, many followed because it was carefully investigated and it changed everything. Y'all, it was seen, it was written, and it was reliable and valuable from the moment that it was written because it was something that actually happened. 2,000 years ago, something extraordinary happened. Something that had the potential to change everything. For you. For me. For us. It's something that we can believe in. Something that we can hold on to. The life of Jesus had to be told. And Luke chose to tell it. We don't believe that Jesus rose from the dead because the Bible tells us so. We believe that Jesus rose from the dead because people saw it. They witnessed it. They wrote about it. And they ultimately gave their lives for it. This first puzzle piece alone is a piece that can change everything in your story and in mine. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, what else can we say but thank you? Thank you for allowing us to ask the hard questions. Thank you for making your Son investigable. But more than that, thank you for sending your Son as a real man who put on real flesh, who died a real death on my behalf. But then 3 days later, really came back to life to prove that not even death was too much for him. To communicate the ultimate hope into our stories as humanity. That's how much you loved us. That's how much you were for us. We are unbelievably grateful for that. It's in your name that we pray. With all eyes still closed, maybe this morning you walked into this room and the questions that we posed at the beginning were the very things that have been holding you back. How can I be confident that Jesus was real? That Jesus did what I'm supposed to believe that this book says he did? How do I know? Why do we follow? And yet for you this morning, just this first puzzle piece has begun to change the picture. It's begun to make you reconsider who Jesus is, how much he loves you, and how much he wants to be in relationship with you. It's peeled away some of that skepticism and doubt, because this wasn't just a book. This is an event. And because of that, maybe today you're ready to take a step, to say yes to that kind of Jesus, to say yes to that kind of God who allows himself to be investigable. And if that's you, man, taking that step and saying yes to Jesus is so ridiculously easy. In your own head, in your own heart, as easy as just repeating these words after me. Heavenly Father, today, I see you differently. I see you as a God who really allowed his only Son to put on flesh and to die on a cross in my place for my sin, for my mistakes. Who took that for me when I don't deserve it. A God who loves me and is for me. And today, I see the proof behind that. Today, I'm choosing to say yes to you. Yes to that kind of love. And to invite you into my story. To invite you into my mess. It's in your name I pray.